Morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 29 of our monthly Meet the Experts Q&A sessions with Cinten's employment team. We actually can't believe this is episode 29. We were just discussing this just before we came on air. Do not know where the time has gone. Just wanted to say thank you for all your positive comments about these sessions, for continuing to sign up to them, for tuning in each week, sending in your questions to me, and for watching the video and listening to the podcast afterwards. We don't take it for granted. We've got a record number of people online this morning listening to this. I didn't actually tell our speakers that just before we'd gone live, but guys, we do actually have record numbers this morning. So as with previous months, the employment team are going to answer three questions. Our speakers are up there on the screen in front of you, Associate Catherine Hope and Trainee Solicitor Emily Richardson. So without any further ado, I'm going to pass you straight over to Catherine, who is going to be dealing with questions one and two. Catherine, good morning, and over to you.
Good morning, thanks David, and good morning everyone. Yes, so the first question is about a lot of what you would have heard in the news over the last couple of months. We're referencing there Morrison's cutting pay for the unvaccinated. And this is where it's a situation where an unvaccinated member of staff is required to self-isolate when they've been a close contact of someone who has tested positive. And that is something that is related solely to vaccination status, because that change came in last August. So it doesn't apply to those who are vaccinated. We've had other organisations such as IKEA and Next introduce those policies. So we've had a question come in about, is this something we can do and what are the implications there? Now, I think if this is something you're considering, there are a number of things to think about from an employment law perspective. I think first things first, I'd be looking at potential breach of contract. If someone is going to be claiming breach of contract, they would first need to be able to show that there is a contractual right to company sick pay in this kind of situation, and that isolation for this purpose amounts to a period of incapacity. So they're entitled to that company sick pay in that particular circumstance. So if I was thinking about doing this, I'd be looking at terms of the contracts, policies and contractual policies, but I'll also be looking at communication, particularly over the last 2 years during the pandemic, with staff about periods of isolation and pay during those periods. I'll be doing that just to make sure that there's not been any, that a right in this situation hasn't been created. I mean, I think it would be unlikely that things would be said so definitively that that would have happened, but it's always just worth checking. It can be the case that employers will offer enhanced company sick pay on a discretionary basis. And if you have that discretion, then yes, in theory, it's something that you should have the ability to make that choice, whether you pay enhanced sick pay in that particular situation. But I will always say and approach that with caution, that with any discretion, that has to be exercised reasonably. And I would say particularly given that individuals who are self-isolating in this kind of situation are still entitled to SSP during the COVID pandemic, I'd always check as well if it's the case that you've been paying them enhanced company sick pay without even thinking about it over the last 2 years, then there's a real risk that that discretion has moved into contractual right. So do check that as well. So if there is that contractual right, it's the same situation as changing any other contractual term. If you were to just unilaterally change that policy and say, right, we're not paying you when you're isolating, then there would be a breach of contract there. So you have to approach it as you would usually, where you seek an employee's consent. You'd need to explain the reason behind it and when that will be implemented and what that would mean. If employees refuse, then it's the same situation where your last resort really is that termination and immediate re-engagement on the new terms. But you really need to remind yourself that in that situation where you have the employees with 2 years service, that termination would amount to a dismissal for the purposes of unfair dismissal claims. So you need to make sure that you have a potentially fair reason and that you're following that fair process, so that consultation. Always just something else to flag is that if you are dealing with 20 or more employees, then if you're proposing to terminate, if there's a refusal to accept that change, then you're going to trigger those collective consultation requirements. So do bear that in mind. It's really something to consider whether it's right for you then. We have had obviously organisations such as John Lewis come out and say, look, our view is that we're not implementing this, and vaccination status and views on that from our perspective isn't a reason why you should treat staff differently. So it's really something to consider and give it some good thought. Something else you really need to consider if you are thinking about introducing this kind of policy is the risk of discrimination. You need to ensure that you're not putting a policy in place and that which will have the effect of people, you know, with particular protected characteristics being put at a disadvantage or being treated unfavourably in such a way that could give rise to discrimination claims. You need to think about people who will be medically exempt, who might be concerned because they are pregnant or they have concerns that relate to their race or religion. They can't have the vaccine because they are disabled. And you really need to think about the implications of a policy and making those adjustments to make sure it doesn't have that discriminatory impact. You need to really think about data protection, because if you're introducing this kind of policy indirectly or directly, you are going to be taking lots of information about, you know, vaccination data. And so you need to make sure that you're dealing with that appropriately under the legislation. It's really important in this situation to make a distinction, because the policies that have been introduced that have been in the news do relate solely to self-isolation, where there's been a close contact with someone who's tested positive. It's not where the person tests positive themselves. At the moment, anyone who tests positive for COVID is subject to that isolation period, which can now obviously be reduced down to 5 days if you're testing negative for those 2 consecutive days. But it applies to everyone regardless of vaccination status. So there remains at this time a good reason to pay that enhanced sick pay if that's what you would normally pay your employees, in order to enable them and encourage them to comply with the current regulations whilst they continue, but also preventing the spread of the virus. Just important to note at the outset is that it's important to note that what came in before Christmas is that you can, if you're an SME, less than 250 employees, you can recover statutory sick pay, and that's for absences from the 21st of December last year up to and before the 24th of March this year. So that is something you can recover. So that's that one. A number of things to consider. So I would advise you take advice if that's something you're considering. Second question is about the isolation periods. Now, as I mentioned before, from the 17th of January, the Health Secretary announced that if you're testing positive for COVID, you can and now are able to end your 10-day isolation period if you are able to get negative lateral flow tests on day 5 and day 6, so consecutive lateral flow tests that are negative. So we've had a question in here about, is that something then, that because that rule has changed, is that something we have to implement? We have to allow our staff back into the office if they've got those 2 consecutive negative tests. In brief, the answer is no, you don't have to do that. And there are a number of reasons for that. What you need to remember is that actually the guidance that comes along with a rule change is actually if you're able to be released early from isolation, so you have those 2 negative tests, you are advised to work from home if you can, but also minimise your contact with individuals who are at risk of having severe illness if they get COVID-19. So that's the government guidance that remains in place at this place in time. You need to think from an employer's perspective. You have the government guidance on a COVID secure workplace, but also you have a legal duty to in terms of the health and safety of your employees. Now, in terms of the COVID-19 secure workplace guidance, that remains in place in terms of carrying out that COVID-19 risk assessment, identifying any control measures, and keeping that under review. And that really runs alongside your statutory duty for employers to provide a safe workplace for their employees. And that involves that risk assessment, also looking at particular groups of individuals who might be at greater risk, such as pregnant employees who might need increased measures to protect them, implementing those measures and keeping them under review. So they tie in together. So it's really something that employers would need to take into account. And if you think about this particular situation, the risk here is the rule change was really introduced because it was found the data showed that 2/3 of individuals are no longer infectious after day 5. So that decision has been made to help the workforces that are struggling to get their staff back into the workplace where they can't work from home. And the idea is that the rapid lateral flow tests will catch those who are infectious, but it won't catch everyone. So there is always that risk And that's what you as an employer will need to consider. And that's what you're looking at when you're implementing and keeping your policies under review, and whether you decide to keep that 10-day period away from the office for those who can work from home. In this situation, if you do have someone working from home, then keeping that 10-day period away from the office, regardless of them testing negative or positive, and they are able to, you know, leave their home, it's a reasonable and easy measure for you to take to minimise that risk down, which is something you are still need, you know, required to think about. So it would seem an appropriate and reasonable thing to do in this situation. In the past, I mean, people have asked about, is there a right for an employee to attend the workplace in this situation? It's unusual for there to be an express right for an employee to attend the workplace in this situation, and there is no implied right for that to happen. Here, there's a reason why they're not attending, and it's reasonable and appropriate in the circumstances. So I can't see there being a risk there in terms of an implied right, and it's unusual for there to be an express one. In brief, going back to the question, you don't have to then strictly, because it's no longer illegal for a staff member to attend the workplace, it's not something you have to be take on board where you have to have your staff straight back if they've got those two negative tests, and it would be seen reasonable, particularly as well because you have to take into account the colleagues those individuals are working with, in terms of they may be concerned about working alongside someone who's still within their 10-day isolation period, even though legally they're allowed to end that isolation, but also those who are particularly vulnerable and at risk of developing severe illness. So you have to bear in mind that guidance, and you're looking at the workforce as a whole. So it seems like it's a reasonable thing to do, and that many employees will be doing, certainly whilst these rules remain in place. Right, I'll pass you on to Emily now, who's going to deal with our third question.
Thanks, Catherine. And sorry for the third COVID-related question, but this one relates to the mandatory vaccine requirement, which was introduced in CQC sectors from the 1st of April this year. So as you'll have seen, the vaccines became mandatory in care homes in November 2021, but these regulations are now being extended to include frontline workers directly involved in patient care, but also non-clinical workers who aren't directly involved with care, but who might have direct contact with patients, so such as receptionists, ward clerks, porters and cleaners. So what these regulations mean is that you can't employ any unvaccinated staff after that deadline unless they have an exemption. So in terms of timescales, that means that the last day an employee can have their first vaccination is the 3rd of February, and that's so that then they've had both of those doses by the 1st of April, sorry, in order to effectively stay employed. But if they haven't, then you'll need to ultimately consider whether dismissal is appropriate in order to comply with the regulations. So before the 3rd of February deadline, it's really important to go through a fair process in case dismissal is ultimately the end result. And this process will help you find out the vaccination status of your employees, and it'll also allow you to take the necessary steps as a result of those findings. So the question is actually good timing, because the first case where an employee was dismissed for being unvaccinated has been taken to a tribunal, and the dismissal was found to be fair. I won't go into the facts, just as it was quite fact specific and the route is unlikely to be followed in a mandatory vaccination sector. But the case was really interesting. It showed the approach that they will take to human rights. So effectively the claimant's breach of physical interference was balanced against the vulnerable people that were put at risk as a result of the claimant's refusal. It also said that where the refusal is only about vaccine safety, so if you have concerns about the vaccine or the trials, and then it's not going to be sufficient, because in the case the claimant had heard conspiracy theories and felt like it had been rushed through the trials, and that's why she initially stated that she didn't want the vaccine. And it also showed the importance of a fair process for dismissal in these circumstances. And the importance of the process is especially important in mandatory vaccine sectors. And that's because the guidance for care homes back in November 2021 said that there is a potentially fair reason for dismissal where it's mandatory, and that's on the basis that an employee cannot continue to work in the position that they do without contravening a duty or restriction under an enactment. The guidance also said that if care homes do anything in terms of dismissing an employee for not taking the vaccine, they won't breach the Equality Act on grounds of age, disability or religion. And whilst that doesn't take away the requirement to consider exemptions and the personal circumstances of the employee who's refusing, it does show that the process that you go through is extremely important, as there is a potentially fair reason there. So in terms of the process, what you need to do is you need to consult with the employees. And that's about the requirement to be vaccinated, the need for evidence, and also the potential consequence of dismissal if the employee doesn't satisfy those requirements. We were given a grace period, and that was from the 6th of January to the 1st of April, and that's for the workforce to be fully vaccinated. But we're nearing the end of January, so, and because employees have had to get their first dose by the 3rd of February, there is quite a tight deadline to do that consultation by I think it's next Thursday is the 3rd of February. So in that process, it will help you filter out who's vaccinated, who isn't yet but is going to be by that deadline, and also who is refusing altogether. And as a result of that, you'll then know where you stand in terms of the next steps for each employee. You've also got to bear in mind that you might need to consult with a recognised trade union if relevant. So the potential outcomes of that consultation are that an employee has had the vaccine, they're going to, or they're refusing it. So if they've had the vaccine, then it's fairly straightforward. All you need to do is get evidence from the employees, and that differs depending on which sector you're in. So for adult social care, there's the NHS COVID pass, and then some of the specific vaccination cards, but they have said that the QR code on the NHS app, for example, isn't sufficient evidence. In the NHS, they'll have a centralised system to see who's been vaccinated and who hasn't. And then once you've got that evidence, you then need to vary their contractual terms. So you can do this either by issuing a new contract, or you can give a letter of variation to show that the changes that have been made to that employee's contract. If the employee is going to get the vaccine, but they won't have it in time, then in this situation, you'd then look to redeploy the employee if that's possible. Or if it's not, then you'd look to place the employee on paid or unpaid leave until they were fully vaccinated. If the employee is refusing, though, you might need to take a different approach. So you need to find out the reasons why they're refusing, and you also need to tell them of the potential of dismissal if they continue to refuse. So hopefully in the consultation process, you'll have been told the reasons why. So this could potentially be they're exempt, so that's medically exempt. They've been involved in clinical trials, they're under 18. There are also some temporary exemptions, so that's for pregnant women up to 16 weeks after birth. And also if you've recently tested positive, I think it's 42 days in order to get your first or second vaccine. Other exemptions could be religious beliefs, and then, sorry, other reasons for refusing could be religious beliefs, or, as is probably usual, is there's just a genuine fear and refusal. And that was the case in the case that I mentioned earlier, that she just did not want the vaccine from the result of trials and her fears. So if they are exempt, you'd need to do a risk assessment, and you need to look at the risk of the spread of COVID, and also the exposure to that individual and other workers that will come into contact, and patients as well. You might want to look at alternatives such as redeployment if that risk assessment is too high. So that's if they're exempt. If the employees just don't want the vaccine, then if you can't redeploy the employee into a new area, you'll probably need to look at dismissal, and you'll need to follow a fair process to do this. So things you should do beforehand is you should meet with the individual employees that are refusing the vaccine, and you should give them the opportunity to explain their circumstances and any reasons why they shouldn't be dismissed. And then you can explore alternatives, like I say, redeployment. but then you need to also provide them with the right to appeal. And it's important here to take and share any notes and allow the employee to be accompanied. If they're still refusing after this meeting, then you are able to give notice. And this can be done after the 3rd of February deadline, because then it's clear that they won't be vaccinated by the 1st of April. But the notice can't expire earlier than the 31st of March. Also, you need to look at how long that notice period is, because if it's longer than the 1st of April deadline, you need to put things in place. So, for example, placing them on leave or redeploying. One thing that you can't do is you can't give the employee notice and then unilaterally retract that unless both parties agree to that. So you couldn't, for example, give notice in time for the regulations, then retract it if the employee then gives evidence. And the guidance also seems to state that you can't say that employment will terminate unless you provide proof by a certain date. And that's because notice needs to be clear and unambiguous. So specifying a certain date would not be. So, like I say, there is quite a tight deadline, but it's really important to comply with this process to ensure that it's as fair as possible given the circumstances. So for the future, you need to update your contracts for new starters to ensure that that new requirement is in there. And for any existing employees, either issue the new contracts or the letter of variation. You also need to update any policies to reflect the regulations. So that's what would be included there is, for example, the purpose and the benefit of the vaccination, which roles are covered, and any data protection issues there. For how to store the vaccination proof, it's different again for different sectors. So if it's adult social care, you're not required to keep individual proof, but you do need to be able to evidence that if there's ever an investigation, you need to be able to show that the systems are in place to ensure that no one's deployed without vaccination. But in the NHS, you will be legally required to show that workers are fully vaccinated. And so you need to think about GDPR issues there. And then for the future as well, just make sure that job adverts have that vaccination as a requirement in there. And then, so I'll pass you back to David.
Thank you to both of you. Very quickly for me, we are continuing to work hard to produce and deliver useful and relevant content, articles, blogs, podcasts, videos, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk. And that includes all episodes of these Q&A sessions. You can also follow the employment team on Twitter at SintonsHR, should you wish to do so. I popped our speakers' details back on the screen. If you would like to discuss anything they've raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with them or a member of the team. Our next session, with February being a shorter month, will be with you on Friday, the 25th of February at 10 a.m, and I'll send the link round for the session nearer to the time. Thank you once again for listening. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you next time.